dodging one more car an hour. That's the issue. The traffic study, the counts is a count. You can adjust it. We could raise the speed limit to 60 and have faster flow through. But that's not the issue. The issue is the noise, the dirt, the pollution, the lack of, we don't have sidewalks where there are bike paths, where the people can't ride their bike, and there's going to be increased accidents. I mean, it's just the law of numbers.
Mr. Bonk, it's really important to let everybody on council have a turn tonight. Thank you. Anybody else?
One thing I'd like to, I think it's fairly obvious to all of us, you know, traffic is a major concern. I think we can all agree that Harvard Park currently gets traffic that comes from Orange, Pepper Pike, Wood, Moreland Hills, Chagrin Falls, and Solon, and much of that traffic probably passes through Orange Village along Harvard Road. That's the same traffic that we're going to see coming to this shopping center. The challenge with traffic is it's a good thing because it brings people to the shopping center, and the community gets benefit from it, from the tax that will come to it from the business that's developed there. And right now, all of that tax money goes over to Harvard Park and or other places outside of the village. This is a wonderful opportunity to capture some of that and benefit the Orange Village residents. The traffic impact is about managing that traffic, not how much are we going to generate, where is it coming from, how do we deal with it. The traffic report that's been submitted, reviewed by our traffic engineer, has looked at what the various opportunities are along with the methodologies for managing that traffic. And Brian has done a very good job. I've sat with him in a number of meetings and analyzing these traffic reports and discussing strategies for how we might go about moving forward on mitigation of the traffic issues that may be there. So the good news is, yes, there's going to be traffic. The bad news is, yes, there's going to be traffic. How do we deal with it is the challenge, and that's what the engineering and the engineers who've done the traffic study and the designers who are developing the project are going to go about doing it. We can reach and look at, you know, where traffic is in, you know, throughout the region and see where it's going to come from and decide whether there's some impact that has to be considered in the design of the shopping center. But I think it's there's a reasonableness factor that has to be applied to what we're doing and how we're doing it. And in the end, you know, what we want to do is, if there is an opportunity to do a development such as this, or for any development for that matter, that we need to address it in the best way possible. And I think that that's what the effort has been done here to achieve that end.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs. Cluter.
Question for the mayor. Kathy, Chagrin Boulevard is the anathema. That's where a lot of the traffic comes through the community. In the fond hope of regionalization, is there any way that we can even project whether we can mitigate any of that mess that's coming through or not? Because that's part of the nightmare on our roads before we put in this development.
The big fix, the four lane with a median, the study we participated in and saved our share of the money for, no, that is not happening in your lifetime or mine. But there are intermediary steps that we are in discussion with and are going to pick back up the ball on moving it forward that can alleviate some of the worst problems, the timing of the lights, maybe some rearranging of the intersection of Orange Place and Chagrin. We're going to tackle what we can do. The total redo of the road, not think is going to happen, to be very realistic.
So that leads me to the next question. If that isn't in the foreseeable future, and we are looking at this development that's going to bring us in income and wonderful things, yes, there is a deleterious effect on the residents of the community, because the traffic, no matter what you tell me, minimally will increase. I don't buy that, not completely. I mean, you can crunch numbers any which way you like. The traffic is going to be very, very bleak in parts of the community, and it's going to infiltrate into many of our residents' lifestyles. And those are the questions that I can't absolutely answer to residents when they ask me that. I can't say, yes, we're looking at studies, and I've got pages and pages and pages of data, and I can't tell you specifically whether there'll be more cars, less cars. You know, this is what they've crunched. These are the numbers they've crunched. But will your way of life be impacted? Yes, possibly. No, possibly.
This is why we put the traffic study on the internet. This is why we're going to put all the information out there. The point is, the residents of the village are going to decide if the positives of this development outweigh the perceived and actual negatives of the development. But please know, the development is happening around us, and if Orange Village doesn't throw our perimeter into the game, it's going to happen, and we're going to have the impact anyways.
No, I get it. I just...
Excuse me? It's going to happen if the residents don't approve?
Other development is going to happen all around us. The Chagrin Highlands and Beechwood, I mean...
Hoosier went in, Eaton went in, Eaton Park, Chagrin Boulevard has been expanded. Yeah, every other community is going to continue to do their development. Beechwood's been lauded for having their development on the perimeter of the village. This is our perimeter of the village. It's going to be up to the residents anyways, no matter.
I think Mr. Lewansky wants to speak.
Yeah, if I could just say a few words, if I could get the mic to work. I live near Crocker Park. And so I experienced all the things before the Crocker Park was there and after Crocker Park was there. So you know what? I live on a busy road. So do I recognize that there are more cars? Probably are there more cars on the road, but I don't feel it. You know what I mean? And I'm within a mile of Crocker Park, so you know I'm relatively close to it. And the exit that I use to go to my house is the exit everybody gets off to go to Crocker Park. So is that more congested? Yeah, that's definitely more congested. But at the end of the day, is it worth it for me and my family to have that amenity to us rather than not having and to deal with a few more seconds, you know, sitting at the light at the interchange to get off the highway and get on the highway? I take the deal any day. And if this would have, you know, if it would have happened to Bob Stark in Westlake, where they said, you know, look, the traffic is just too much, you know, go away, and he would have done it in Avon, and you know, Avon would have gotten the benefits of all the things that Westlake now has that are positives. I mean, the growth that Westlake has are positives. You've got you've got a new office building coming that's bringing a lot of jobs, a lot of good things to Westlake as a result, I believe, of Crocker Park. And I believe a very strong analogy can be made between that situation and what's going on here.
Can I just ask a question of a traffic engineer? I mean, rather than talk about our differences, what if we talk about solutions? For example, and this is outside of the box and may not be doable, what if everybody coming out of Pinecrest onto Harvard Road had to turn right? Everybody had to turn right, get on the freeway and pick their exit in order to go wherever it is
they are
going.
Unless they live in Orange?
Well, maybe there would be a lane for Orange residents, but that's another story. What if everybody had to come out of the project, turn right, and take that first, they can go south, they can go north, they can take the first exit or go for miles, wherever they live, east or west.
The intersections.
And why bother? All the exit traffic would be eliminated from the village.
The intersections,
why couldn't we do that?
The intersections in that direction would have enough capacity to handle that amount of traffic.
So we put up little markers saying you can't turn left, and everybody goes onto the freeway, and that's it.
Yeah, you're penalizing your own citizens for not being able to get to the...
Well, I'm not sure with my own citizens, but I think that my own citizens aren't going to mind if they have to do a little something in the center or another exit to get back into the village. But, you know, let's send everybody else on their way. And not only will they go on their way when they exit, they will learn how to come from where they live to the project using the freeway instead of using Orange Village byways. So that would be my proposal for an alternative way to handle the traffic solution for Orange Village.
Very interesting.
Because, you know, here's the problem. You can come every Wednesday and tell us about the incremental number of cars at this intersection and so on and so forth. And you're going to have to go to the ballot on this. There's going to have to be a vote. And if the people of the community believe, rightly or wrongly, that there's a serious traffic problem potential by this project, well, naturally they're not going to vote for it. But I think if you show them that the traffic is going to go out and go away from their village, and the incoming is going to come from wherever it comes, I'll grant you that. But in the meantime, half those people coming through are going to figure out how to do it on the freeway, and the next thing you know, we'll have access in and out, which is really on the perimeter of the village, and everybody will be happy.
I know you remember how scared everybody was of the Harvard Road interchange. Did it happen?
Yes.
Oh, my God, everybody's so happy it's there.
Right.
I think it's an interesting solution, but it makes me think that we need to go back to what our engineer, Brian Mader, plus the TMS engineers have said all along, is it still will be a little bit of an impact, but not all negative. And for me, I think you're limiting, if you're going to only allow left turns only, then you're absolutely limiting.
Right turn.
Or right turn only, I'm sorry. Right turn only, no left turns. All the Orange Village residents and other residents from accessing this thing.
But you could go Chagrin.
So we'll have
I would not be happy driving 10 or 15 minutes out of my way to get somewhere.
You could put a carded lane in for Orange Village residents. Half of whom would want to go to Emory or go to.
I think we have to trust our volunteers.
Carded.
Hold on one second.
You don't get through unless you have a card.
A key card?
Hold on one second. I think we have to trust that the engineers have our best interests at heart, especially Brian Mader, when we're talking about this. I'm not an engineer. I'm not going to question, you know, how to make this work best. I'm going to count on them to let them answer how it works best. So, anybody else?
What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that project, on that type of a solution? I mean, I know that it might not. I mean, to me, actually, it seems to me that if you had a smooth flow of traffic flowing out of the project, right as if it were on a ramp already, going one of the two ramps, and I think it would be clearly a better solution than we've been kicking around here for some of these problems.
It will have some of its difficulties, but like I said, the intersections would handle all that traffic, and it's a possibility. The thing that I point out is if I'm a citizen who lives east of the site and I'm coming home from work and I want to go to the center to pick up something before I go home, I'll never get back home once I come out because I can't make the left.
You mean you might have to go either to Emory or to Chagrin?
Yeah, the last thing anybody wants to do is go to Chagrin.
Well, that's true.
I'm going to speak a little bit as a lawyer for the developer and a little bit as a resident who lives close to where the development would be. So I'm envisioning leaving the development and, as Brandon Duper mentioned, doing one of two things. Either exiting at Chagrin, which council has already acknowledged is a problem without a development like this. So the prospect of forcing more traffic onto Chagrin either off of Orange Place or 271. More than a few cars.
Isn't that what you've been telling me all night long?
Or
just a few more cars in the peak hour?
Except that now all of those cars are going to be going in one direction. Alternatively, they could go to Emory and then make the circuitous route back through the village.
A minute ago it was an imperceptible passage of cars. Now it's a big problem. How come?
Because all of those cars are going to have to go only one of two directions instead of one of...
Now it's not just
three that then spreads out to another three directions that then spreads out to another three directions. They've all got to go one of two directions.
I don't think it's a bad solution anymore.
With regard to the notion of key cards on public streets, that I don't want to speak for the village. That creates some other issues having to do with access to public roads.
You know,
roads.
In your case, from that project, we could put a road in with a key card that would get you home in 10 seconds.
I'm not sure that that could be lawfully done. But as Mike Schweikert said,
don't you want anybody on Oxford Court? Waterford, excuse me.
As Mike said, the biggest concern with that is you're taking what really we hope the village would perceive as an amenity, someplace that people would look forward to visiting and having as part of their lives, and making it more difficult for village residents to get to and from. And that would really be a shame. We all have our different views of development.
I have the exact same problem, and to me it would be a solution.
You could just put me down for a no vote then, if that's how we're doing traffic.
I think traffic engineers know how to move traffic in a safe, convenient manner that doesn't have the sorts of impacts that we're talking about. And this is the sort of thing that we leave to the traffic engineers and, frankly, take advantage of Dave Lewansky's proposal to revisit this so that if there is an issue that isn't anticipated, it'll be identified and corrected. That's a very good offer. The risk of showing my bias. I'm sorry?
Identified, corrected, and paid for by him?
Identified, corrected, and paid for.
We need to set the parameters.
All right, well, we can do that. They're going to do that at another time.
That would be part of the developer's agreement.
Right. And like to focus on.
Yeah, regret agreeing to that one. The lawyer probably stabbed you just now.
Are there any other questions for our professionals?
About the traffic?
About the whole project, because we're going to be voting next week on whether or not to put this on the ballot for the whole public, for Orange Village residents to vote on.
I'm referring to
are we going to have the agreement
tonight of the proposed text for the plan development.
Are we
going to
have the agreement to look at?
When we're talking about the plan amendments, could somebody clarify this for me? That
which one?
I think you've got a red line.
We wanted to make the tenancy so restrictive, and yet there's so many possibilities that we can't even envision or come up with now. So the plan amendments were broken down into whether it's use or just type of use, and maybe Judd will do a better job of explaining it. But if it's a similar use and it's just a particular tenant, it goes to planning and zoning. If it's a change of use, it has to go to council. If it's a change of zoning, it has to go to the voters.
It's
just an administrative relief valve.
Okay. Because historically, and this is sort of talking a little bit apples and pears, but not quite, when the residents voted for the Parker Young property, and they voted in a certain fashion, and the residents thought this is what they were going to get, it was sort of single family dwellings and something else, then somewhere along the line there was a deed restriction and it threw everything wrong. And ever since then the developer was able to come back and change things. I want to make sure that whatever I'm looking at here, you know, whatever you're telling me with regard to
it's just a tenancy issue.
It's not going to change.
Just minor. It allows for minor flexibility. It doesn't change the plan.
And does it tie into variances then?
No.
Okay. These are just amendments, meaning simplistic.
Minor.
Simplistic. Small.
Exactly.
All right.
Did I explain that well enough?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, I get it. But I that was a concern. What am I reading?
It's very minor administrative.
Okay. I did not read it as minor, the same issues.
We should probably
and
discuss that.
This document that was given here. The residents are saying, as our law director said, this is the contract that we're presenting to it. And this contract has all kinds of loopholes, options, waivers of that the community doesn't get to vote on, planning and zoning gets to go on to, an appointed body, not as someone who has to stand up for an election. I have real problems with, other than the member of planning and zoning who's a council member.
And the mayor.
The mayor. But I have real problems with, if we're presenting this as the contract, that the community doesn't get a major say on definitions. Now, when you say minor issues, I have a problem with that. I found it interesting that, I love this one, section, where is it, administrative amendments section, it says, with pursuant to the planning and zoning, the applicant shall select at least one person of expertise relating to real estate and development to assist planning and zoning. The applicant is going to pick our expert. With they're going to help us. Obviously, they have a vested interest. But any of the changes need to be defined.
And we all have the same interest in having it be the best development possible.
They have the best interest to maximize their profits. Now, whether they achieve that via the best development and how they do it, they are interested in maximizing their profits, or I'm going to be shocked. But
well, that's any business. I mean,
any business, that's
profits,
my point.
But,
so
but
they don't want to necessarily have
yeah,
the best.
Yeah, but you still have to keep good grace with people. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think there's any malintent going on here, that he's just trying to make money off of the residents.
No, we're looking
scheme.
To work collaboratively and have it be the best product possible.
But maximize profits with the best product. Otherwise, you can't maximize profits.
And there's another issue which I find intriguing is why the conservation easement has such a high standard to change while the commercial aspects can be changed by administrative procedures.
Well, the conservation is a deed-restricted green space buffer, period. Nothing can ever change on that.
Well, other than
when you're developing and building, there might be circumstances where
why
would
we have a specific higher standard for that rather than any of the changes? And these changes already have a large degree of flexibility in it.
Judd?
Do you have anything you can add to this, like maybe some history?
Well, let's begin with what this is. This is not a contract. This is a zoning code that we've written. The zoning code creates a set of guidelines for the development of property within the village, whether it's the U1 zoning district or whether it's the proposed Pinecrest development district. What we've worked to do is to establish a set of reasonable guidelines that can result in a development that will provide the village with a valuable asset when it's completed. One of the challenges that is faced in developing retail shopping centers, and I've been doing this I've been involved with it for 40 years, is that retail constantly changes. We had to build, while we want to build in restrictions that encourage and promote the highest level of development that we can encourage within the code, we needed to allow for flexibility so that over time, where tenants change and retailers change, that the development can continue to be maintained at its best level. We tried to define the ways in which that could occur in a manner that could be managed appropriately by the city and the village and could be understandable to a third party who's going to have to live with the regulations that this imposes upon them.
We currently have a process, and Herb worked on it for years and explained it to me, called variances, and we give approvals all the time.
But we don't want to.
We not want to have that same.
I'm going to tell you why. The variance process is can be very unreasonable at times, and it can be very unnecessary at times. We don't want to have a development that constantly requires a variance to be created every time you want to change a tenant, every time you want to go out and lease a tenant. In order for a developer to be able to produce a shopping center, there has to be somewhere where there is some level of certainty on their part that they can go out and engage with the prospective tenants that we want to come to this center, that we would encourage to come to this center, and not create impediments for creating difficulties for them to be able to bring them here. If they can't go with some level of certainty and say, well, you can be at this center, then it becomes impossible for them to develop a letter of intent and then a lease with them, which is necessary for the development to occur at all. So the language that's been created, the language that's been crafted in this document has fundamentally been based on that notion that we recognize the fact that there has to be a way in which they can, there may be some tenant that we don't know about that may occur on the radar screen that may not necessarily fit the round hole and square peg that we've created, and there needs to be a mechanism by which that can be produced and that they can go out into the marketplace and develop those the tenants that are going to make this shopping center successful. It is incredibly challenging to go out and do this without some direction. And what we tried to do here is to create a direction that gives them a platform with which to work that will result in a cohesive shopping center that will benefit the community and be successful for the developer. If it's not successful for the developer in the end of the day, we don't get much benefit from it.
You know, I don't disagree with what Judd is saying, but I will say this, that the whole discussion, whether you're talking from your position or the mayor's position that we want a good project, all of which is true, this is really about control. That's what it's about. This document and the next document to come is about control. You know, where the fulcrum will be on the teeter-totter, so to speak. And that's what has to be, that's what has to satisfy everyone, particularly the seven people who are wearing the hats of the village. I think that can be done. I'm not even suggesting that this doesn't do it. I'm simply saying that I think it's inappropriate to suggest that someone who asks for more control is suggesting that they don't want a successful project. Maybe he's saying that we'd like to control something because we think we can make a better decision, having the vested interests of the village in mind, than someone who has the vested interests of their own profit in mind. I mean, not that either one could make a good decision, but if you're wearing the hat of the village, you want to get as much control, if you will, for the village to be sure that in the end, the village is and all of its interests are met, because you know, in the long run, we can't pick up the village and move it. It's going to be what it is once this project gets in place. So we want to make sure that it is the best it can be, and that when these future issues come up that we don't see clearly today, because our crystal ball is a little foggy as it usually is, we want to be a significant part. Maybe even a determinative part of the decision-making process. That's really what we're discussing here. I don't think one side wants a successful project and the other side doesn't. I think it's a question of how you get the questions answered. That's all.
If I can weigh in from the developer's perspective,
sure.
On this, because I think I agree with the point being made here that there is a line being drawn between how much control the village has and how much latitude the developer has.
Absolutely. So
from the developer's perspective, I want to go back to some things that I've said in previous meetings to give a little bit of context here. With regard to the retail portion of this project, because remember there are residential portions as well, but with regard to the retail portion, the zoning code that you have before you does something a number of things that are very, very unusual. It establishes these four different sub-districts, four commercial sub-districts, And then it identifies what activities can and can't be conducted within each of those. If you look at the typical zoning code in a community where there's retail and other commercial uses as well as residential uses, you'll see very broad categories. And you'd recognize what's permitted and what's not permitted just by their titles. There'd be an industrial district. There'd be a retail district. There'd be a regional retail district. And you'd know essentially what would be permitted in each of those. The zoning code that you have in front of you is much more specific than that. It doesn't simply stop at those kinds of descriptions. It identifies a number of uses within each of those different districts that are either prohibited, flat out prohibited, or restricted. Even if they are retail uses, there's prohibitions on certain kinds of retail, mm-hmm. which in most other communities wouldn't be prohibited or restricted. There's also prohibitions on the size of different stores within each of those districts. Again, very, very unusual for a zoning code to do that at all, much less within something called sub-districts within a certain district. And then there are restrictions on the total size of different uses in different buildings, and as well as architectural characteristics that have to be maintained within all of those. So you've got a whole series of restrictions and prohibitions that have been put together in the code. And the challenge that Judd described really is the challenge that the developer is confronted with given those restrictions. How do we make this the best center that it can be in the face of all of those restrictions? Don't get me wrong. We want to meet and exceed the village's expectations with regard to the quality of the center, with regard to the quality of the tenants. But we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what tenant is going to come up that didn't exist 6 months ago, much less 5 years from now, right. that may be restricted or prohibited under the zoning code as it's been written and would be a dynamite tenant, the sort of tenant that anybody sitting in this room would want to have if they had the foresight to consider it. And the issue is what Judd described. How do you deal with that situation? Admittedly, there's not a 100% absolutely right answer. The question is, how do you balance those competing interests in that kind of situation where you want to be able to
attract
that
tenant? Why are they competing?
Because from a developer's perspective, a developer wants to bring in those tenants and knows, because the developer wants the center to be the best center it can be, knows what's going to fit within it. The village has established through this zoning code restrictions that may be in conflict. That's why there's a conflict, because the code is going to establish the potential
now,
for the conflict.
As I understand it, this this proposed zoning code that we're reviewing and we'll vote on was the subject of many months of cooperative negotiation and discussion between the developer and his team and the administration. Why would not the same kind of process that may have to be done in a more emergent session, emergent way than the usual slow process of the of local government, why wouldn't it not be appropriate to have the procedures in this document or otherwise reflect the same kind of interest?
Well, that we do. And in fact, the planner originally proposed that just be up to the mayor. And we said, no, we're going to put it to a process that's a public process and a public body. And that's why we put the ones to planning and zoning. I mean, it's not a 3-month process. It's a meeting or two process. And that's not on uses. That's just on permitted uses, but specific ones that might.
And I think Mr. Bonk, if I understand Mr. Bonk, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he's at least asking a reasonable question, which is why it would not be the council, who are the elected members of the government, that would make some of these ultimate decisions just as they're making.
Well, you will. The council will. It's just one category that the planning and zoning, and that is very limited in scope to just maybe a tenant that can't be perceived of today that doesn't exactly fit into the description or a definition of what a gift shop is or what a retail thing is. It's just a specific type. And the reason is because 3 months worth of council meetings to make a quick little decision like that just seems overly.
May not be necessary.
You could put it in the agreement.
May not be necessary.
Well, that's what we decided, it wasn't.
How long is your sales cycle before you get a tenant? Before you get a tenant, when you have conversations, when you think that you have a tenant closing on, and I know you, that's not yours, but if we develop the mythical tenant that doesn't fit the box, how long is it before you're going to be really aware that you may close on this?
Could
will
be
they make a deal before you know you can have them?
Could be instantly.
But then, no.
Will they make a deal before they know they're allowed to be here? Will they wait 3 months of council meetings to
Would they wait a month?
No,
what?
Well, they may or they may not. It depends on how many opportunities they have in the Western company and how many locations they need to
Mr. Goodman? Can you please
that's a very
go
good
to the mic?
You're not, are you a lawyer? That's a very good lawyer.
No, it's the right answer, though. It's the right answer.
We stood here and discussed all of this.
It's the right answer.
Well, I mean, what happens is it's whether they're willing to spend their time and their capital up front and make a deal with the owner, the landlord, and then have it subject to a city approval or not. Or are they going to come in and get city approval and go through that and then go make a deal while someone else could end up leasing their space? So there's just so many factors that could be involved that it probably would be a roadblock.
And isn't he really asking if the time frame it takes for you to identify this potential tenant, feel them out, do the sales performance, whatever it may take, and so forth, and then when they show that spark of interest, and then the length of time that takes is not so short that you couldn't make them known to this body or to this village so that they could say, gee, well, if they don't happen to fit in paragraph D, we'll create paragraph D sub 1.
It might not be publicly voted on.
It's
not a matter of public voting.
It's a cumbersome, when you throw the roadblocks like that in front of it, they're probably just going to look at another city or another area. I mean, unless they really, really, really want this location. And by the way, our process is 6 months just to identify and get interest usually, 6 months to make a deal, and then 6 months to get the documents done before. I mean, it's usually 18 months. I mean, or, 12 to 18 months. 12 months is an absolute minimum on a deal of these kind of real estate deals. So they're not going to wait that whole period of time, and then there's competitive forces as well. I just think that if it's a decision that has to come to a vote of this body, I think some tenants might do it, yes, but I think that 8 out of 10 will not. So I couldn't say for sure, but I think that 8 out of 10 would not. That answers your question. I think it would be a roadblock for the majority of them.
We really worked you over hard to have it be a planning and zoning.
Yeah, right. So
let me add something in. In most, the development of most commercial zoning codes, the code is usually written to cover the general land use, coverage, parking ratios, open space, general uses of property, identifies the general building areas. We've gone a great deal further in this code to develop some quality levels that are unusual in many zoning codes, and to try to encourage and promote the best of the best. And with that, we recognize if we're going to have that restriction on this end, we needed to have a relief valve on this end to enable opportunities to come about because we went that much further in developing the code and overlaying controls on the kinds of tenants, where those tenants would come from, the nature of the shopping center, the quality of the buildings that are going to be built in the development. There's an awful lot here that goes beyond most traditional zoning code developments for retail centers. And we worked, as the mayor said, and as Mr. Burns said, we've worked very hard to wrestle with them to get that to a point where it worked for both parties, and to come up with a mechanism that allowed for the village to have a say-so going forward where there are complexities and unanticipated opportunities that might come about. So please understand that as we've produced this document, as we've created this piece of legislation, we've done so to provide an opportunity for the village to see what the best of a development could be, and we've worked with the developer and pushed the developer to the limits in enabling us to see that end.
Let's do this. Let's walk through an example.
Okay.
Real quick. All right, turn to page 9 of the zoning code. Thank you. Paragraph, on page 9, there's a list of paragraphs, and on page 8, I think it says these are the prohibited. These are the prohibited uses. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, I get down to G. Bars, unless incidental to a restaurant or a hotel. Now, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, when I was in Columbus, I went to the AMC Dine-In Theater. Okay, they have a big bar in their lobby. Not everybody's going to the Dine-In Theater, and the Dine-In Theater is not a restaurant necessarily as restaurants are normally defined. But they do have a very nice bar in their lobby, which mm-hmm. is being used by people going to the dine-in, and I dare say people not going to the dine-in, but they're a few minutes before their movie. So now the theater comes into our project, and they want to have a bar, and they probably will, if AMC in Columbia, in Easton, is an example of what you're thinking about. All right, now it's under, as I read this, they could not do that because they are not a restaurant or a hotel, they're a theater.
That's allowed.
That's allowed.
With a minimum of 150 seats and age 21 and over only. That's no, in there.
Yeah.
It's listed as prohibited.
No.
And also it lists an exception to that as well in that particular segment. If you indicates bars unless incidental to a restaurant or hotel, except that high-end bars specializing in craft beers or wine and or craft cocktails shall be permitted. So, you know, we're in trying to encourage a, if you will, high-end establishment.
On page 10,
okay.
Extent the following uses are otherwise permitted, they are restricted as follows. Movie theaters shall have 200 or fewer seats and admit 21 and over. So movie theaters are allowed as long as they meet those criteria.
Well, how does that put a bar in a movie theater?
That doesn't let them have a bar.
Huh?
How does that put a bar in a movie theater?
It's just
on the page
part of dining, and dining's allowed to.
No, but
no,
you've got a prohibition.
The bar section. It's a conflict.
You've got a prohibition. I mean, I'm not raising it to resolve it tonight. What I'm looking at it is I'm saying, look,
maybe that's what planning and
zoning we come up with a. That's what I'm asking. We come up now. They're looking for a theater, as I understand it, that will have dine-in capacity.
A restaurant.
Right.
Well, they might want to also not dine-in theater. Come up to the mic. Come up to the mic so I can hear you.
Please.
Come up to the mic, please.
This
is what I'm trying to.
Yeah, the bar that you're talking about is part of. It may be you know, separate and physically, but it still has a restaurant associated with it, a full service restaurant associated with it. It's not a theater bar. We're not going to do a theater bar like a cocktail.
So,
thing.
Are you familiar with the AMC in Easton?
Vaguely.
Okay. All right. Well, all I'm saying is. In that particular theater,
yeah.
And maybe what you're picturing is different
yeah.
from what I'm picturing. In that particular theater, they have, let's say they have 20 auditoriums.
Yep.
18 of them, let's say, are just movie auditoriums.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a dine-in auditorium where
okay.
you go in, you sit down, you eat in your seat as you watch the movie.
Okay.
You order, they serve you, you watch the movie. That's for people over 21. Then there's one for only people who aren't 21.
Okay.
Family. There's another auditorium for a family type thing. Very lovely. Okay. Now, their bar, of course, is open to all,
mm-hmm.
not just those going to dine in,
mm-hmm.
and not just those going to the casual dine in.
Yep.
Because anybody can come up their stairs in the middle, go to the bar,
mm-hmm.
buy whatever they'd like, and then just go see the Lone Ranger, and that's it.
Okay.
And over here, they're getting dinner and so forth. That's fine. I don't have a problem with any of these combinations,
yep.
or permutations. What I was trying to figure out is if the language of what we pass doesn't fit that example, and that's the example you happen to want to put in place.
Right. I think.
Then where do we what do we do with? We have paragraph G here, and we don't like paragraph G. You come to us and you say, "Gee, you know, we found AMC. They want to put in this beautiful theater. It's going to have a lovely dine-in auditorium. It's going to have a casual meal auditorium. It's going to have 12 straight." Movie auditoriums like any Cineplex does or what have you. And unfortunately, paragraph G doesn't work for them because it doesn't say that they can have a bar. Okay, now where do we go from there? That's my question.
So that might be the kind of thing.
Yeah, there you go. You've got the release valve. Let's say that there's some kind of problem with that. I think that falls within. And maybe it's because I was within the discussions.
It does not. In other words,
okay,
you now have found a tenant that you want.
It's
that
clearly
is
without
prohibited, or
right.
at least not described.
So
as
now
permitted.
we've got to go to through the amendment process. You've got to go to planning commission and say, hey, look, here it is. What do you think?
Well, that's why I want it to be a variance process.
This whole process is off the charts restrictive. Okay. Nobody would agree to this but this guy. I'm telling you right now. No one would agree to this but me. I agreed to it because I wanted to show that we meant what we said when we talked about what kind of tenants we wanted to do. No one else would come through here and say, okay, we're going to allow to have this giant restriction. We're going to make you put your tenant up in front of a group of people, decide whether they want to do the tenant or not, and take the decision completely away from the business people, which is what you're doing, but we're still allowing it to go forward.
And fix
no, we're not going that far.
I think it is going that far.
No.
The way it is right now.
I don't agree with you there. I mean,
okay.
No one is asking for you to bring a tenant to any of whether it's this body or to planning and zoning a particular tenant and pass on them. But if
that's absolutely how it works,
you're coming to us with a change in the genre in some sense. And we're perfectly willing to make that change.
No, we're coming to you with a specific tenant, not a change in the genre.
Change in use that comes to council.
It's the change that's necessary for you to assign that tenant.
We're talking about specific tenants that would not fit within squarely within the definitions that are there. If they don't fit squarely within the definitions, there's got to be that release valve, and this allows it to happen.
Right, and that's the process he's questioning.
Yeah, and I think that it was a hard fought battle that. I thought it was a hard fought battle that I would rather not have any of that exist
of
at all.
Not. Neither would we.
You wouldn't?
We'd rather have something that everybody understands and is comfortable with going in.
Well, you know.
One of the problems is we get into such specificity. And we're trying to set rules that everybody can live with. I mean, I'm reading here the bar one, and I'll bring up the bar one because I had a question. What is a high-end bar? Please define. The largest craft bar in Ohio by volume and anything is the Winking Lizard. Does that qualify? They sell more craft bars, beers, than any place else.
No.
And Lizardville is number two.
No, it doesn't qualify.
I mean, when I read that definition, how do I explain it to people? What is that? Because sometime in the future, it will become contentious. What is it?
I mean, well, it's a descriptive word, high-end. I mean, it's like fat,
well,
thin.
What's
fat, what's thin? You know, it
red is high-end, Ponderosa is not. I mean,
yeah, I mean, we have a general idea of what high-end is.
Well, my concern is this. If okay.
And I know that you're just...
I want to understand who you're bringing in. You're telling me it's high end, and
yeah.
The answer is the largest guy in town, probably in Ohio, with craft beers, is the Winking Lizard.
Yeah, we don't.
But how do you define the high end portion?
I don't believe that the, let's say the process would go like this. If I thought that was high-end, which it's not, and let's just say that I went forward, then I would go to Planning Commission. They would obviously, in the right, their right mind, say that is not high-end, and they would not permit it.
I'd like to remind everybody that our role as council people on this board is to look at the larger picture and not to tear apart at every possible turn of the page, you know, everything that's been done by professionals to create this document. I think it's really important that we look at it and we decide whether or not this is great to put on the ballot for the November ballot for the public to look at. These are all important issues, but these kind of things are not going to persuade me one way or the other how I'm going to vote next week. Mr. Duber?
Let me just add my two cents as well. We are, and again, I am not saying here that I'm endorsing this project. I'm not saying I'm against this project. I think there's some issues that still have come by. However, with any business that you run, I mean, we are having a lot of decisions basically into the tenants that he can put in there. And again, I mean, I'll just say right here again, I think you're crazy. You know, in your traffic thing you said today, I think you're crazy, and your lawyer probably would tell you you're crazy too. But you're giving us a lot of leeway, and he's giving us a lot of leeway, and we say we want it very specific, and now we're saying it's too specific. We can't, this isn't our business to run. This is our business. This is our job to go ahead and say, you know, if we think this is a good thing for the community and if this will impede the community with such things as traffic. Beyond that, I mean, I'm not comfortable going ahead and telling him who to put in his shops. And I think there's a lot of very good standards, which is well above what most normal people would, you know, agree to. But, you know, I think he's making those concessions. Again, it's not our job to say, you know, maybe one person thinks that, you know, one shopping store is high-end and another's not. I mean, let's be realistic. He has a big stake in this. He's making such severe limitations in what he can put in here that, you know, I don't think he's here to screw this up. And again, I'm not saying I endorse this project, and I still think there's some things that we have to work out that are important, but I think council as a whole needs to step back a little bit. We're not the developer. We don't do this for a living. We don't go ahead and find tenants. I'm not a traffic engineer. We have to listen to them somewhat. You know, I think that some of the issues that are being discussed are the wrong issues. And again, you let him develop the project. We are having a lot of restrictions here, and he's agreed to that. And I think we move on. If there's problems that people have with traffic and they don't want to approve it because of that, fine, completely understandable. And you know, you go that route. But for us to sit here and peek and go through every single little definition, I mean, there's always an amending process to this if there's a tenant that doesn't fit this little bubble that, you know, we're putting these restrictions on. And I think we need to back off of that a little bit. That's all.
Just an observation. Madam Mayor, can we please put on the website that council will be voting on this next week, and we'll invite the public?
Probably on there.
We certainly can, but I think we've done that.
Is it already on the
website? It's on the website.
Yeah, we make sure that the agendas go on, it shows it's
but I think this is I think it's particularly important as this body.
Say we are going to vote on it?
We will be voting on this. You're invited to come and whatever.
Well, we'll let everybody know once again through an e-news and on the website that it's a public hearing.
Yeah, I would appreciate that because this is the biggest thing that we've looked at in the history of Orange Village for a development.
Bigger than Schwinn Highlands?
Was it on the postcard that you sent out?
Yeah, because it's really in our, really in our.
It's really on our perimeter. Just
this is really
on. Oh, on the one we sent out.
So I just want to make sure we're doing that right.
Let me just say that something. I never thought I would have to say to a lawyer, the devil is in the details, but I guess I do. Here's the problem. Okay, I love this project. You don't want to go on record. I love the project. I love Orange Village more. That's the problem. When you start putting together documents that make the agreement and the relationship between the two parties, it's got to be sound. If it's not sound, it's not going to be good for either party. So the project I love and the village I love are going to be at odds one day, and I don't like that, and I don't look forward to that.
So every detail in this document is important to both parties, not just to me, not just to the village, and not just to Mr. Wonski. Everybody in there, on his team. That's what we're talking about when we say go through this. When we pass